enter it and are cast in hell with the faithless. The next ayah, ayah 4 of Surah Al-Hadid, reads, "They will call out to them, 'Did we not used to be with you?' They will say, 'Yes.' But you cast yourselves into temptation, and you awaited for reverse fortune for the faithful, and were doubtful, and false hopes deceived you until the edict of Allah arrived, and the deceiver deceived you concerning Allah." There have always been hypocrites in human communities, but hypocrisy continues to become more and more complicated just as progress and development in human communities continues. There is little said on hypocrisy and hypocrites in the heavenly books before the Holy Quran. This is due to the fact that the human life used to be simple and people were frank in early eras. But as much as civilizations grew and communications were established among human communities, individuals and communities became more and more complicated and tried to hide their sentiments and inner thoughts. Until we reached present day, the age of communications, the digital age, and the age of cyberspace. This is the age in which one can portray things upside down and present the opposite of everything. This age can be called the age of hypocrisy. What we can see in the international arena is that some countries try to masquerade as Muslim countries, and this is clearly hypocrisy. These countries participate in Islamic conferences and events and chant slogans in support of Muslims, but in practice, they're beside the arch enemy of Muslims, the United States and the Israeli regime. Nearly 34,000 innocent civilians, mostly Palestinian women and children, have been massacred in the Gaza Strip, while the United States of America explicitly announces that it has provided the main bulk of ammunition and weaponry for the Israeli regime. In other words, the American bases in Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Turkey and so on are the places which act as US liaison for the Israeli genocide in Gaza. These bases are located in countries whose leaders feign sympathy with Palestinian brothers and sisters. The United Arab Emirates is among the main countries which has sent humanitarian aid to Palestine, yet this country seriously pursues normalization of ties with the Zionist regime. Turkey is among the main providers of fuel for the Israeli aircraft and ships, whereas it lashes out at Israel with fiery remarks. One of the representatives of Turkish political parties said on the performance of his government towards Israel, "The pilots who bombard Gaza are trained in Konya and their fuel is provided from Iskenderun in Turkey." Dear listeners, the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, said, "The hypocrites are worse than the faithless." This reveals how surreptitiously dangerous they are and how serious blows they can deal to Islam and Muslims.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. السلام علیکم dear listeners, welcome back to a new episode of For a Better Life. Once again we have the opportunity to be here together in order to talk more about ways, rituals and Islamic principles in order to have a better life. As you know, in the last episode, we talked about the medical benefit of fasting in holy month of Ramadan, which are mostly unknown up to now. With due respect of all the medical development that we made, still, there are unknown benefits to this actually beautiful and holy act of fasting in the holy month of Ramadan. But in this episode, we're going to talk more about the spiritual benefit of this month. Why is it that Ramadan seems to have such a profound impact on our spirituality, particularly given the physical hardships that it entails? The most distinct feature of Ramadan is that it requires able Muslims to fast the entire month. The fact that this distinct feature correlates with the value of the month is perhaps testament to how important and beneficial fasting is. Indeed, the activity entails immense spiritual benefits that lay the foundations for the spiritual uplift we witness during the month. Since we are often unaware of these benefits, this episode is for you, dear listeners, in order to be familiar with the point that how ironically fasting is good for the soul. From the spiritual point of view, the ultimate objective of fasting is a spiritual betterment. As Allah Himself signified in the Holy Quran that, O believers, fasting is prescribed for you as it was for those before you. So perhaps you will become mindful of Allah. And some of the most imperative benefits that I'm going to have a point and a hint on them, then we're going to go and elaborate them more in details, are fasting promotes the development of the quality of righteousness, or taqwa, or piety, inward and outward. Another thing is that it fosters closeness to Allah the Almighty with reasonable practices of good activities. Another dimension is it exposes how affectionate the Muslims are towards the Creator, obeying His ordains with the praises of all equipment. It provides a myriad of blessings and benedictions for performing duties like prayer and charity. And also, it helps the purification of the soul and spirituality, which is the essential goal of Islamic spirituality. And unlike other worships, fasting likes to show off that no one can indulge in the act of showing off during a fast. And for sure, there are so many hints to count in this actual content of fasting that we're going to go through more details after a short break. Stay tuned. We're going to come back in a heartbeat. Welcome back, dear listeners. This is IRB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For a Better Life. We talked about some spiritual benefits of fasting during the holy month of Ramadan briefly, and we're going to go through more details in this part of our episode. Before going through the spiritual benefits, there are some social benefits of fasting that I'm going to count them for you. Fasting furnishes social, moral, and spiritual values, followed by several additional opportunities for devotion, meditation, and reciting the Holy Quran. In fact, this avenue ensures harmony and equality and terminates all kinds of disparities and anxiety and depression and hopelessness in society. It further creates a sense of awareness and empathy, and thus people help each other and socialize. Here, the rich people experience the pangs of hunger and thirst, and thus fulfill their obligations with respect to the poor. In some cases, affluent people welcome their poverty-stricken neighbors and give them best hospitality throughout the month of Ramadan with the intention to get the reward from Allah the Almighty. And during this month, the drunkards get rid of liquor and puffing cigarettes and smokes as they are deprived of using them the whole day. To a certain extent, this is a great time for the addicted of such bad habits to quit and protect their health from spoiling and money from extravagance. Since they are constrained from these actual addictions for 1 month, they would tend not to revert to the same things for the rest of their life. Furthermore, it brings punctuality into their lives. A person observing fast performs all his prayers at the proper time, including the including reciting the Holy Quran and all of these issues. And now I believe there are a lot of blessings in order to talk about the holy month of Ramadan. But dear listeners, let's go for a short break, then we're gonna come back. Stay tuned.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. It's all I need. It's all I need. All I need.
For a better life once again here. And as you remember, dear listeners, we were talking about the spiritual aspects and benefits of fasting in holy month of Ramadan. And we actually mentioned the social aspects of these months, that fasting during these months will flourish the social, moral, and spiritual values that are followed by so many opportunities for the true believers in order to get closer to Allah Almighty. And talking more about the spiritual benefits, one of the most important one that I believe and assume that we're all aware is weakening your nafs. The nafs is the component of an individual that compels them towards their animalistic desires. And each individual is responsible for controlling and overcoming these animalistic desires that will lead them in order to do bad deeds and committing sins. Physical ailments are the source of strength for these nafs that will lead you towards the bad deeds, including food and drink. The logical conclusion, therefore, is that depriving the physical body from food and drink would weaken these nafs that will lead you towards the bad deeds, and hence its ability to invite the individual towards evil and sin. So I believe the first and the most important aspect of the spiritual dimension and benefit of fasting during the holy month of Ramadan is helping you in order to control yourself against your bad desires. Since good deeds enhance one's spirituality and bring everyone closer to Allah Almighty, it might be quite understandable that fasting entails a great degree of spiritual benefit, particularly with regards to weakening your ability to sin. From this dimension, we talked about weakening the nafs or the self and the ego of yourself that will lead you towards the bad deeds. And on the other hand, this beautiful act of fasting during the holy month of Ramadan will help you in order to strengthen your soul. Keeping up with the first point that I mentioned, weakening the nafs that will lead you towards the bad deeds would naturally mean strengthening the soul, since it's the vehicle through which an individual is inclined towards good deeds and hence towards developing a stronger relationship with Allah Almighty. This is why we feel, for example, that heightened sense of closeness to Allah during the month of Ramadan, and our soul no longer has to battle our nafs in the desire to do good, and it is empowered by the fast. Hence, the increased willingness to do good is one of the most beneficial aspects of fasting in holy month of Ramadan. And inshallah, Allah Almighty will help everyone and each of us in order to go through this month of Ramadan successfully and fortunately and completely in order to get closer to Allah Almighty and purify your soul, which is the goal of the creation of human beings. Thank you, dear listeners, for listening to me. It was all the time I had for today's episode. I wish it was helpful for you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha.
Answering the doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman, Allah, who is Al-Mannan,
La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Ata, the host of this program. For today's discussion, we have invited Shaykh Rouhani and a special guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom to answer questions related to Islamic beliefs. Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Insha'Allah, 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 you'll find your way.
Okay, Shaykh Rouhani, according to the Shiite beliefs, the Shiite infallible imams or ma'sumin were considered as the ocean of knowledge. We can say, and the Shiites believe that their imams had this vast knowledge on different topics. Now, the main question is that why none of the infallible Shiite imams had any innovation or invention, it's better to say, in their lives in order to facilitate the affairs of the people of their time, if they were that much knowledgeable of their own time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know, first of all, we should know that when we talk about the knowledge of A'imma alayhim salatu wassalam, the divine knowledge of the prophets alayhim salatu wassalam, does it include all the different sciences, different fields of studies, particularly experimental kind of knowledge or empirical kind of knowledges? They all be also included in the knowledge of the prophets and imams? The answer is that it is not necessary for the imam or for the prophet to provide the people with these types of knowledge. The main objective of the mission of the prophets and imams are the guidance of the people into the right path. They're saving them from the hellfire and helping them to get closer to Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yes.
Helping them to become good people, the righteous people, the true believers, mu'mineen, and save them from the hellfire and send them to Jannah and guide them to the right path. This is the main objective of the revelation, wahi, and also the imamate, and ilm of the imam should be at the service of the people in this way. So we should look at this knowledge of the imam from this perspective, that can this knowledge of the prophets and imams guide the people to the right path, guide the people to the right way or not, save the people from the hellfire or not, help them to get closer to Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, taqarrub ila Allah or not. If it works in this field, then their knowledge and their science worked, and there is no any problem with their sciences.
Yes.
This is the first point, that absolutely, of course, this hidayah, this divine guidance that are brought to us by the prophets and the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam, they did work, and if someone follow them, they will be saved from the hellfire, and they will get the proximity to Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the perfection. This is the first point. The second point is that even when it comes to these, let's say, experimental sciences, that we have a saying from Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salatu wasalam, that once imams asked the people that, please ask me your questions about, for example, let me say that he said that, I know the ways of the heaven, I know the knowledge of the heavens.
Yes.
More than the knowledge of what you have in about this worldly life or earth and world. And then you see that the people asked him very, let's say, strange kind of questions, very meaningless kind of questions. It shows that the people were not prepared, were not ready to receive this sort of knowledge from the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam. Otherwise, Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam told them that, Saluni qabla an tafqiduni.
Yes.
Ask me before I die, before you lose me. But of course, the people, because the people were illiterate, the people were not, let's say, fully knowledgeable people, that's why they did not refer to the Imam for these sort of things. This is the first point. The second point is that among the students of Ahlul Bayt, among the students of Imam al-Baqir, Imam al-Sadiq, we have great scientists, Jabir ibn Hayyan, and many other, let's say, scientists we have in the history, that they are the students of Ahlul Bayt, والسلام, they got this knowledge, and later their knowledge transmitted to the other generations of the scientists. Finally, it led to a kind of discoveries in the history, because these discoveries that are made by the scientists are not out of nothing.
Yes.
The knowledge that were transmitted to these scientists, to the previous generations of these scientists, it paved the ground for all these discoveries and improvement in different fields of studies.
That's right.
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Praises to Allah, all glories to Allah, we worship Allah, and no one but Allah.
And the serious question is that, were really imams selected to solve the scientific problems of the people? There was Imam of Hidayah and the guidance for the people. It is as if the book of Quran is not the book to answer our scientific questions. It is a book of Hidayah. I think imams, as the true followers of Prophet Muhammad and the Holy Quran, were also so, isn't it, Shaykh?
You know, we have two dimensions in our, let's say, existence. One is the immaterial aspect of our existence, and the other one is the material aspect of our existence. When it comes to the immaterial aspect, we need to a kind of heavenly and divinely kind of guidance and knowledge that should be given to us through wahi, revelation, and through the Ahlul Bayt Aimma alayhim salatu wasalam, which is a divinely kind of source of knowledge.
Yes.
So this knowledge is beyond our normal, or let's say, natural kind of knowledge and sciences. And when it comes to the material aspect, to the physical and body bodily kind of aspect of our existence. Whatever knowledge that we need in this respect, we can acquire it. Okay. We can attain it by our sensation, by our sensory knowledge, or sensory, let's say, faculties. And our aql, our intellect, is able to attain this knowledge, to achieve this knowledge. That's why Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala provided us with all with the means that we need to attain this kind of knowledge, and He provided us with aql, with intellect, with mind, with brain, and He enabled us to solve these sort of problems by ourselves. Mm-hmm. But the problem that we cannot solve is that immaterial, let's say, aspect of life, that the problems that goes beyond the nature, goes beyond this let's say physical,
yes,
world, which is immaterial, which is transcendent kind of knowledge. What we need is this sort of knowledge that should be brought to us by the prophets through wahy and revelation.
Yes.
But this kind of experimental or empirical kind of things that you mentioned, human being can solve them.
Yes.
By our own, let's say, intellect, by our own brain, by our own these sensory kind of faculties. We should not forget that, of course, in the history we have had some prophets who also provided people with this sort of knowledge, also like Prophet Sulaiman alayhi salam, and the other prophets, Prophet Khidr, for example, Prophet Idris, and the other prophets. It is mentioned because now some of the scholars are of the view that whatever types of sciences and knowledge, pieces of knowledge that we have, the main sources for all these types of knowledge are the prophets.
Yes.
Because the prophets were the first teachers of the mankind, and they actually taught the people, and they actually brought the knowledge for the people. Then those knowledge in the history, through all the history, expanded and extended into different fields of studies. That's why the main source of knowledge of the mankind are all divinely kind of sources, according to, let's say, Islamic kind of principles and teachings. But of course, since man are able to enhance, to extend these sort of studies and knowledge by their own selves, then they do not need to any kind of divinely or, let's say, heavenly sort of sources for these sort of knowledge.
That's all right. And as you said, the golden age of the Islamic developments in science, we can say, was filled of experts from the lands of Persia and Iraq and Syria, we can say in Yemen, who helped very much in order to develop science in different fields of studies. Al-Haytham, Al-Khwarizmi, we can say Al-Biruni, At-Tusi, you know.
Yeah, of course.
These are not simple names. And all the modern developments were created on the shoulders of such developments.
Exactly. They owe to these scholars.
They owe to these scholars on that time. But at the same time, as I said, the A'immas and the infallible Imams had direct role in guiding the hearts and the souls of the people of their time. And most of the time, the people referred to them, even the scientists referred to them, in order to get answers to the spiritual, it's better to say, developments, spiritual growth at their time. And they were the Imams of Hidayah rather than the Imam of Science or something like that. And if we consider religion as a specialized field of study, Shaykh, for sure, A'immas were the experts.
Exactly.
For example, we know that.
Of course, they did have the knowledge.
Yes. Fiqh, Quran, Imam Ali alayhi salam, Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam helped the king of his time to coin the first Islamic coin,
exactly,
for the trademarking, you know, on that time, because the coins were Romans. So now that we can say the signs were changed into the Islamic ones by the help of Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, Imam Ali alayhi salam, Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam. They had knowledge on different fields of studies, Islamic sciences, hadith, you know, history of Islam, Quran, and so on. So these can be considered as a scientific help of the Imams too, isn't it?
Yes, of course. You know that, as I mentioned, there are many scholars, many scientists in the history that their teachers, their previous generations of their teachers, will go to the Imam al-Sadiq and Imam al-Baqir, alayhi salatu wassalam.
Mm-hmm.
That's why at the time of these two great Imams, the different fields of studies were there, and the different kind of students from across the Islamic world were there. Among them were muhaddisin, let's say, among them were fuqaha, among them were theologians, among them were also scientists. So that's why these scientists also later they improved and perfected the different fields of studies by the help of A'imma alayhi salatu wassalam. As you rightly mentioned, the Islamic civilization in the 4th and 5th century was the most, let's say, powerful and developed and perfect kind of civilization in the whole world, which were established by Muslims by the help of Islamic teachings and doctrines, which is based on the teachings and doctrines of the Quran, Prophet, and Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wassalam.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh, for a nice elaboration regarding this topic.
You're welcome.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
Inna fi al-jannati nahran min Ali wa Hussein wa لعلي وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسان لعلي وحسين وحسان كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن.
A window to Palestine.
Soy Daniel Jadwe.
I am Daniel Jadwe, a citizen of Chile, originally from Palestine, born like so many other Palestinians around the world in the diaspora. Chile has one of the largest communities outside the Arab world. It is said that we are close to 300,000, but we are millions spread across the face of the earth, far from our homeland, but committed to the identity, history, and struggle of our people, of our land, which is and will forever be Palestine. Hello and welcome to the program. Today we are witnessing a genocide in Palestine, but this did not start on October the 7th. It is part of a plan that was born more than 125 years ago with a perfectly studied and planned colonization process. Today we will talk about how Palestine has been changed and how the occupation has changed the life of this territory and the entire area that surrounds it. Let's analyze and have a deeper look into this issue.
Thank you.
Efectivamente, hace más de 100 años comenzaron a llegar.
Indeed, more than 100 years ago, they began to arrive as victims of the pogroms of Tsarist Russia, and years later, the Nazi Holocaust. But shortly after they were received with open arms of solidarity with their pain, they began to show their true face, to expropriate the Palestinians, to destroy their villages, to destroy their ancient olive plantations, to keep absolutely everything, destroying schools and houses and any vestige of the territory's history. Let's see below the following report by our correspondent in Gaza, Huda Hejazi.
Before the aggression on the Gaza Strip on October 7th, the Israeli cabinet had approved new plans to build thousands of homes in illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank. According to international law, the construction of these settlements is illegal and constitutes an obstacle to peace. However, this decision occurred amid an increase in violence by settlers and the occupation army in the Palestinian territories, and this was one of the reasons that caused the Operation Al-Aqsa flood to break out.
The construction of Israeli settlements in the Palestinian territories and in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds is an illegal, illegitimate act and condemnable. Under no circumstances can the permanence of these settlements be supported, since they do not agree with the norms of international law in general. The only solution is to put an end to these settlements.
According to Palestinian sources, this Israeli war has been one of the most brutal in history, which has caused the destruction of more than 70% of the structures in the Gaza Strip. Given this, the Israeli minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, assured that the massacre in Gaza is an opportunity to develop a project that will encourage Gazan residents to immigrate to other countries in the world. This is in addition to the solution proposed by the Minister of Finance, Bezalel Smotrich, which encourages the voluntary immigration of the citizens of Gaza and in fact depopulate the area of Palestinians.
They're trying to bomb all the places, displace people by force. They say that this is a voluntary displacement, but in reality it is not. The displacement is due to the crimes of the occupation, the deliberate and systematic bombing of civilians. They even bomb areas where the displaced people live. This is a forced displacement of citizens under armed pressure, including planes and tanks, as well as a psychological and media impact with a war waged against the Palestinian people.
The reports released by the UN indicate a very significant increase in violent incursions by Israeli settlers in the West Bank cities since October 7th. This has caused the death of a record number of Palestinians. This is also considered an integral part of the Zionist plan that seeks to completely dispossess Palestinians of their land.
The attack on Palestinian citizens in the cities of the West Bank, Jerusalem al-Quds, or even inside occupied Palestine is considered a crime in every sense. This is a political cost for Netanyahu's cabinet, along with Ben-Gvir and Smotrich. They have decided to give the settlers the green light to do whatever they want with the objectives of invading and the Judaization that the settlers are carrying out, including the raids on the Al-Aqsa Mosque. This is actually one of the reasons that led to the outbreak of the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. Therefore, the cost for the cabinet of Netanyahu, who is now appeasing the settlers after giving them the green light, is very high.
There are a large number of Gazans who have decided to stay in their homes and not go out despite the great danger to their lives. However, they have decided to resist and not allow a second Nakba to take place. This is another act of resistance by the Palestinian population. It is to continue showing the world the crimes committed by the Israeli regime. A large number of journalists and media workers have been murdered for the simple fact of being eyes of the truth and reporting Israel's actions.
The way to confront this occupation is to stay alive and rebuild any place that is being destroyed. Today, every Palestinian citizen who has a mobile phone is now able to broadcast through social media and expose this occupation by spreading the truth about everything. The painful truth is that in the past month, we've seen that journalists are being attacked because they wanted to show the true image of the occupation. They've also become a target for exposing the crimes of the occupation in front of the Arab and international community.
Despite the constant crimes committed by the Israeli regime in Gaza and other Palestinian territories, the world continues to fold its arms and do nothing to stop this massacre. For 75 years, Palestinians have lived under Israeli occupation. During all these decades, it has been carrying out the most atrocious crimes against the Palestinian population. Now, again in the 21st century, and in the face of silence from the international community, the Zionists seek to expel the Gazans from their territories to take control of the rest of Palestine. Huda Hejazi, Gaza, Palestine.
The current inhabitants of the Gaza Strip, depending on their age, have been forcibly displaced between one and three times over the last 75 years. It all began in 1897 at the first Zionist Congress in Basel, Switzerland, when Theodor Herzl presented to a tiny part of the world Jewry their project to rebuild the regime of Israel from the Nile to Euphrates, the founding myth of being part of the chosen people and this being the promised land. We thank our correspondent in Gaza, Huda Hejazi, and I invite you to stay tuned because in the next section we will be talking with a very special guest.
Estaremos conversando con una invitada muy especial.
Well, we are back, and in this section we are going to talk with Silvana Rabinovic, who is a researcher at the Philological Research Institute of the National Autonomous University of Mexico.
Gracias, Silvana, por haber aceptado esta invitación.
Thank you, Silvana, for accepting this welcome invitation. I want to ask you a question that many are asking in the current context with this ongoing genocide. At what point in this historical development of the Zionist project are we, and how far do they intend to go?
Well, first of all, I really appreciate the invitation. I'm very honored. Well, I want to mention points about the colonial and national colonial political theology of Israel. I think that from that point of view, we've reached the moment when the last apocalyptic mooring is loose. And when we talk about the Zionist project, I think we have to also take into account Christian Zionism, which is very interested in this apocalypse for the second coming of Christ. And well, I believe that there is no return to this. There was already genocide in progress there, but now we're witness to an accelerated genocide. It's been unleashed. And I'm surprised by the reception it has among the Israeli population, even those that claim to be progressive, and even among former conscientious objectors who today have decided, at age 40 and a half, for example, to enroll in this massacre, this genocide. That is extremely worrying because it's an attitude that was growing and deepening. And in this case, there really was no difference between the different administrations in Israel, whether those assumed to be left-wing, which can be discussed, or those on the right regarding the settlements. We're, of course, focused on Gaza, which is something atrocious, and it is difficult to understand why the entire world does not rise up against the genocide there. Well, some governments around the world, or rather nations, have taken actions. In other words, the siege that surprised the Israelis on October 7th is being constantly documented. That, of course, it is very scary that they will take you out of bed and arrest you. But it happens. As Haggai Matar, the director of Plus 92 magazine, said, it happens every day there. Just one letter signed by 669 Israelis in support of South Africa's claim before the International Court of Justice is all that was achieved from the entire population, considering even those who did not vote for this administration, those who took to the streets to protest against Netanyahu. That really catches my attention. They hid themselves under the cloak of what that assures them of collective suicide with what they consider the enemy.
En el primer congreso sionista
After the first Zionist Congress in 1897, there was talk of Israel from the Nile to the Euphrates. In 1948, they accepted, of course, the partition of Palestine, but declared that it was a first step. Then in 1967, in the misnamed Six-Day War, they occupied the entire Palestinian territory and some areas of the Syrian Golan Heights and Lebanon, in where the Zionist project is going.
¿Dónde para el proyecto sionista?
A ver, el proyecto sionista, yo quisiera hacer un poquito de historia.
Let's see, the Zionist project. It goes back a little bit to history, because from the first Zionist Congress to the ones that followed, there was a lot of discussion there. And there were voices that did not agree at all with this form of foreign colonialism in the region and typically European version, nor with the fact of considering the original inhabitants of the land as enemies. I mean, in 2006, I translated Martin Buber's political text, and there was a whole movement, a movement that was against it. Let's see, in 1946, when the Anglo-American Commission went to Palestine to see if the land was actually divided or not, which was carried out on November the 29th, 1947, they disobeyed the leadership of the Jewish population of Palestine. Martin Buber, Yehuda Magnus, and Moshe Slimansky. They all arrived and convinced the Anglo-American Commission that the land should not be divided, that there should be neither one nor two national states, but a confederation of autonomous communities from the part of Greater Syria. So within the Zionist movements, there were also these positions which were all the time denouncing the demographic and expansionist ideas as deeply contradictory with the love of the land, with the possibilities of coexistence that existed. However, well, we see now that not a bit of that remains. That was present until 1948. And all the years that Martin Buber was still alive, Martin Buber continued fighting to protect, to protest the properties, the rights of the Palestinian population. Of course, he died in 1965. He no longer saw 1967. He did not see all that expansionist fever, absolutely foreign to the culture of the region. I would also like to point to the time of the secularization of the Hebrew language. Yehuda proposed and practiced this secularization of the language, which was much discussed due to the connotations it later had, which we are seeing now in its worst moment and in its worst version. He said that the words that had to be completed from so many countries, that the Hebrew language had to be confined to the ritual religious sphere, had to be completed from Arabic, which was the closest language, the most sisterly, and the one of the place. But well, the Zionist leadership is doubly Eurocentric. It is Eurocentric in Central Europe, and it used the Jews of Arab countries as human shields to carry out this project, which, as Theodor Herzl, the founder of Zionism, said, had to have its function be the retaining wall that prevents Eastern barbarism from entering Europe. And well, this is what we're seeing now, and it is in its worst phase, of course.
Y está en su peor fase, por supuesto.
Gracias, Silvana.
Thank you, Silvana. Now I'm going to give way to the audience. They have two questions they want to ask you. Please.
Por favor.
Hola, mi nombre es Jangiria.
Hello, my name is Jangiria. I am a philosophy professor, also of Palestinian descent in Chile. I wanted to ask you the following question. I wanted to know what you think about the biblical names that the Israelis use for both the use of weapons and also the military campaigns that they carry out, precisely in a land that we know has that connotation.
Gracias, Hani. Eso es justamente el tema que yo más trabajo.
Thanks. That is precisely the topic that I work on the most. I mean, the abusive ways in which the biblical text and biblical figures are used to name these campaigns, weapons. And well, it has a purpose that Netanyahu recently reminded us of when he spoke of Amalek, which is that people who must be exterminated, according to God, for having abused the weakest at the exit from Egypt. Something that one says now. Well, the one who is playing the role of Amalek is the Netanyahu administration, and not the people of Gaza whom he's trying to annihilate. This happens in Raphael Industries. What's happening? From the name Raphael, since it is actually an acronym, to each of the names of the campaign. I've detailed this in my book, The Drone Bible, about such abuses and the abuses of biblical figures in Israel's political discourse. I believe that in the Bible, there are two sources. One is monarchical and the other one is prophetic. The prophetic sets limit to the monarchic. Obviously, the one that prevails is the monarchic in a European sovereignist version. And what it seems to me is that the Bible is needed precisely to evoke the limiting forces that the prophetic sources set.
The limit que ponía la la fuente profética.
Hola.
Hello, my name is Carmen Mendoza. I am an international journalist, and I would like to know who are the settlers, where do they come from, and what role have they played and are playing in the occupation of Palestine?
Gracias por la pregunta, Carmen. Ahora, los colonos.
Thanks for the question, Carmen. Let's see. The settlers, many of them, are Zionist immigrants, very convinced of this expansionist vision that Daniel described at the beginning. They tend to come from the United States and France and also other places. There are, of course, Israelis born there, of course, but it is striking how there are people who have immigrated to occupy the land, to radically carry out this ethnic cleansing to the point of genocide, and which is also manifested in the siege. There are Israeli organizations that seek to protect the settlers, especially Area C. But the truth is that Area A, similar to Area B and Area C, are constantly besieged by the army. On June the 8th, 50 armored cars poured into Ramallah just to destroy the apartment of someone who was there in jail in Israel in Area A. So this form of presence is what they call showing presence. It makes the settlers feel completely free to commit all kinds of crimes. Even the last administration has greatly encouraged them to be armed with heavy weapons. Even teenagers who go to school armed with heavy weapons. So let's say there is a debasement, a civil debasement at the beginning. Now, deepening of this debasement is enormous, and they are very convinced settlers and young people. I went to the Jordan Valley accompanying a group of Israeli retirees who defend the shepherds so that they can graze. What happened was that two young boys of about 16 years old went down with their cows to destroy the wheat fields with their tiny tractors to scare the sheep. In other words, there is a siege. There is a constant siege, and there are, of course, young people born there, but also very right-wing, as well as convinced Zionists who emigrate to precisely what they call badly, very badly, Judaize the land. This is what we see in the Jerusalem area, the Greater Jerusalem Project, right? But we shouldn't also forget about what's happening in the worst of the lowest in Hebron, which is Al-Khalil.
La peor de las más bajas en Hebron, que es Al-Khalil.
Muchas gracias, Silvana.
Thank you very much, Silvana, for accepting our invitation. What you say is absolutely true. Here in Chile, there is a Hebrew Institute that in one of its last years makes study trips to the occupied territories, and there they do a course of almost a week called Gutsna, where they teach Chilean citizens how to use weapons wearing Israeli army uniform. And that, incredibly, is legal. I thank you very much for your participation, and let's take a break.
Y vamos a una pausa, ya regresamos.
Dear listeners, that was the first part of A Window to Palestine. You can listen to the second part tomorrow.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, asking for forgiveness in these last few nights of the holy month of Ramadan. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So we are here talking about the holy month of Ramadan, a month which truly is full of blessings and different good things that Allah has blessed us with. It is filled with such spirituality and purity. And one interesting thing, even though it is a little bit unfortunate and it makes you a little bit sad, is how the holy month of Ramadan very quickly ends. It seems that in modern times, the holy month of Ramadan every single year seems to fly by faster. And this beautiful banquet of Allah, this beautiful feast in which we were the divine guests of a very divine and sublime host, quickly comes to an end. Now, before this holy month of Ramadan ends, one of the things that really is of great importance is this idea of istighfar and this idea of asking for forgiveness. You know, we did talk about this concept in a previous program on the early days of the holy month of Ramadan. But now, as the holy month of Ramadan is closing, this is one of the things that we really need to focus on and we really need to pay attention to. And from the bottom and the depth of our hearts and souls, we need to do a very sincere istighfar and ask the Almighty Allah to forgive us before this holy month ends. Amirul Mu'mineen Imam Ali alayhi salam has very eloquently given us a warning and has said that truly wretched is an individual who has not been forgiven in the holy month of Ramadan.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back. This is A2Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about forgiveness and istighfar in these last few days and nights of the holy month of Ramadan. You know, as we said in the previous segment, the holy month of Ramadan really passes by so quickly when you think about it. And inshallah, may Allah give us the blessing and the opportunity to witness another holy month of Ramadan in our lives in the upcoming years, insha'Allah. So we were talking about istighfar and how Imam Ali alayhi salam has said that the most wretched of individuals is the one who has not been forgiven in the holy month of Ramadan, really showing us the importance of asking for forgiveness and being forgiven. Now, there's various reasons why perhaps, you know, we do not attain forgiveness. One is that, well, we don't ask for forgiveness in the holy month of Ramadan, or we are not sincere in our forgiveness and seeking forgiveness. Or, for example, we have continued to, God forbid, commit sins in the holy month and we haven't really, you know, repented, or we haven't really tried to change our lives, right? Because trying to change our life and trying to improve ourselves, this is a form of istighfar. So in these last few nights, with a sincere repentance, you know, and really having a intimate conversation with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and really asking for forgiveness and feeling regret and shame for what we have done, and asking for forgiveness for those things, and then using our faculties for good. These are some of the things that we should do before the end of the holy month of Ramadan.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The leader's speech on the first day of the Iranian New Year, attended by people from all walks of life. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with people from all walks of life on the first day of the Iranian New Year, on Wednesday, 20th of March. The meeting